wait for hours. I've been to Dominican Hospital and I've waited for hours.
For sure.
And yet my
Let me ask you another question, though, about because, you know, here's all this, you know, this. How long did this event take to prepare for in Oakland?
Honestly, I have no idea. I believe they were planning it. I believe Occupy Oakland had begun already planning it in mid-late December. I had been involved with other Occupy-related things here.
So about a month, you think?
A little over, I'd say probably a little over a month.
Now, is there another, I mean, you say you were emboldened and empowered, and your commitment was deepened by this, although you were traumatized. Do you think that was the experience, and how would you know, but of most of the 2,000 people that were in this rally, or do you think that they are now intimidated and, shall we say, and those watching, either intimidated or alienated from this because of how the media has portrayed it and how the police reacted to it?
There were a lot of things. I want to call your attention to the many fine things that have been written on InEBay. My friend Molly wrote an account of her experience. Molly is the woman that was my friend who stood next to me.
But try to focus on my question, though.
Oh, and I will.
Okay.
There are people that are emboldened, and this is basically what they said. That far from being scared off, they're going to process the emotions and the trauma they experienced. But if anything, it's a radicalizing moment to go from expecting your police to protect you. The images that we grow up with, the friendly police officer that helps a lost child find his parents.
Yeah, but you don't think the people, they're really, by the way, I'd like to apologize to everybody because the phones have been on busy and that should have been changed when I walked into the station. So,
and to call attention to that, it was a radicalizing moment.
My apologies.
And we're emboldened. There's a march going on February the 20th. It's called... they're going to...
You're almost
a group
on free
of us
radio.
Going to
handcuffed. Quentin. Just a second. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is Neil. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Neil.
Hi, Neil.
Well, good to hear that you're talking about what went on in Oakland.
Neil, have you been trying to call for the last hour?
For the past half hour.
I'm sorry.
Oops.
I apologize. Okay. I apologize to everyone else. Please, I will try really hard to not be too colorblind. Go ahead with your questions.
Well, I had a statement, and then I had a question for Michael.
All right.
I think it should come as little surprise that I basically disagree with his assessment on Occupy Santa Cruz being a viable, functioning community. It wasn't. It had emergency care sometimes. It was overstressed in terms of cleaning. It was the most un-ecologically sustainable campsite I've ever seen. And, it had a lot of problems. Highly dysfunctional. And I would say, as I said several times, that the tactic of camping, which it is, got assumed all other tactics, even to the point of personal safety. So I cannot see how Michael can say that this was a viable functioning community.
I never said that it was a viable functioning community. I believe that the encampment was a first step, and there were problems, and there were problems that needed to be addressed. However, I was drawing a study of contrast between what the homeless had before the encampment, which was basically sleeping in bushes, and what they had after
the encampment as well. I mean,
and after the encampment,
I want to say something about this too.
It was not sustainable, and I'm sorry if I led that impression. However, I believe things happened in a series of steps, and that was the first step in people beginning to work towards their own autonomy. And in the beginning, there were a lot of people that were not working together, and towards the end, I saw a lot more cooperation.
And I just want to say, with respect to that, Neil, I think, in terms of, you know, ecological disaster, I think, frankly, that's a lot of horseshit. I think that you can see clearly that the grass has been restored, and I think that if specific problems have been presented to the encampment in a very particular way, they would have been dealt with and addressed. But the authorities were not interested in allowing for a sustainable situation. Quite the contrary. They preferred, you know, to focus on, I don't know, 6 tons of feces that they found, you know, three blocks away across the river at the Veterans Hall. You know, so what I'm saying is that I think I wouldn't agree with you in your assessment, but go ahead.
Well, oh, by the way, that feces didn't exist. That was a pure canard.
Yeah, of course not. You know,
yeah, but
I mean, there were problems. You know, they closed the bathrooms at night. You know, and they wouldn't allow people to set a porta potty up on the property.
Right.
Yes, they created fecal problems.
Absolutely, there's plenty of things to criticize the city about. But I'm just talking about from the perspective of the campsite. It was not ecologically sustainable, and you can't judge that by the grass. You can judge it by the amount of trash that was, you know, sent out of there, and the way we dealt with trash or didn't deal with trash. It was a pretty littered place throughout. I mean, with the exception of one or two notable people like John, who was there practically every day picking up trash.
And Squirrel, too, who actually cleaned out porta lots.
I have to say, I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with you, Michael, because toward the end, I saw some kind of convergence, but overall, it seemed like there were people on the front steps who were doing the GAs, and then there were people who were camping who were, over time, they developed their own GA. But those two sections of Occupy Santa Cruz never really joined and got together. And I really started to notice it toward the end, especially when I'd walk by and there'd be people sleeping at 2 in the afternoon, and I thought, these are not activists. These are people sleeping.
Yeah, but I would say, though, that I would encourage you to... There have been issues of classism. Like, what actually defines an activist? Like, I want to leave you with that question. What defines an activist? Is it a middle-class person that has a house and all his or her faculties? Are we not permitting people with PTSD or substance abuse issues from being activists? And what does it mean to occupy? Is occupying the same thing as squatting? I don't know. I've been left with a whole bunch of issues. When I first became involved with Occupy, I was a bit intimidated by some of the campers because they have PTSD, and it was a different milieu. But over time, I became less fearful because I actually looked around and I began to see who my neighbors were. And I also began to realize that these are people that are probably the most oppressed people in society. That we're in Black History Month, which celebrates the fact that that at a certain point in history we began to try to work beyond the problems of oppressed groups. And I would say again that the homeless people in our community, we should not be scared of them. And I feel like there are a lot of people scared of them because they're gruff, they have PTSD, they have substance issues, some of them shoot up, and yeah, it's some of them are scary, but
they're still people.
But they're still people.
And they can come together
and
they can and produce positive results as they did at the campground. Neil, I want to ask you, I know you've been working with your own Thursday group.
Not anymore.
Oh, you were. How long did that go for?
That's gone. About 5 weeks. It never really got off the ground. It was developing toward an internet GA, virtual GA. But it was pretty much, I started to notice it was just me. It was just me having a monologue. And I said, okay, I'm now floating a proposal that OCHAT is over. If you disagree or you want it to go on, then say something.
Right.
And nobody really did. And, you know, they said, well, this is a good idea, but no, I really don't want
it. How many people were involved with this while you were doing it?
Oh, variable. It varied between, I guess, maybe five and nine
uh-huh.
at different points. And I wasn't really looking. At first, I was looking to try and reboot Occupy Santa Cruz through what I saw as a totally compromised organization stuck on camping. And I wanted to see us do more active things. And then when I saw, well, I'm not getting huge groups of people, which I actually thought I was sidelined from the whole, you know, take over the bank thing, I thought, okay, well, let's see what we can do with what we got. And I, you know, went toward an internet direction. And then I just thought, well, this is just me talking. I like the sound of my own voice, but I don't like to be a dictator. So,
hey, I do. I'll dictate for you.
Okay,
I like the sound of your voice,
Camille.
Well, so we have a disagreement here between the two of you and me as well about, you know, the value of, and this is still an issue. Keith McHenry brought it up a week or two ago, and he thinks occupying in a camping way is a very important part, still a very important part of, you know, the residual or the reinvigorated occupies.
Can I respond in a more complete way? Because I want to say something positive about camping.
Sure.
I'm always... You know,
but remember, we're not really talking about camping. The main focus of this, Neil, is the protests that happened this weekend and the police violence. So
okay.
Maybe you might want to comment on that, too.
I'll be brief. I think camping works on the level of establishing a cultural center. So if you just go out and protest and go home, you don't establish a cultural or a community tie. And that's the one advantage of camping, is that you can have teach-ins there, you can have a center. We don't have a center right now. In terms of the Oakland protest, well, what would you like to know?
Well, I don't know. You've been listening probably to some of this because you haven't been able to get in, thanks to my problems here at the studio.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think camping also provides a survival center that is very important because one of the primary issues of the occupies is the kind of really threat to survival that all of us, that is created by, you know, the 1%, if you will, or the disparity of wealth or the power differential. And we're all headed on a bus for the cliff.
Yeah.
And that is dramatically not only demonstrated but addressed by these occupies and creates a kind of a melting pot where people become activists. Some of them don't. Some of them continue to survive. But, you know, there's a little bit of the activist in every survival person there. And that's what I think I notice, particularly when they find their own survival is threatened. And now, not that much. Occupy hasn't... The campground people have not come back together again. There hasn't been a second campground. People are being harassed in the Poganip and being driven away and their property confiscated now in isolated places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so and the environmental destruction will go on probably worse.
I don't know about that.
Because there are people are...
They have to have somewhere to poop.
They're less responsible than they were. Even they have to, you know, they're off by they have less respect for the law because the laws turned them into criminals. At Occupy, they weren't criminals. At least, you know, for a couple of months, in theory, they weren't criminals.
Hmm.
Now they are, as they were before. So, you know, why show respect for the law if you're an outlaw anyway? I mean, I know Bob Dylan notwithstanding, you know, you're supposed to be even more careful. No. Some people just say, fuck that shit. I got to survive. And, you know, and I, admittedly, you try to be low profile. But you were going to say also, I was asking you, what do you think, I mean, the alternative to an occupation, and that's what Oakland is doing, is our mass protests that bring people out on the streets. I take it you're in favor of those.
Definitely.
Yeah. We don't have these in Santa Cruz,
well,
really.
The difference is in Oakland, you will get on any given Saturday, 2,000 people will come out and show their support, and some people will come over from San Francisco. In Santa Cruz, there's a small group of people involved with Occupy Santa Cruz. And yet they're swimming against the tepidity, the lukewarmness of the liberals in the area that are only concerned about their own comfort. Once the reality of the economy hits them, if it does, then they'll be out with us. But until then, they won't be concerned about the homeless. They won't be concerned about people in jail.
They won't even be concerned about joining you on the internet.
While I'm thinking about it, I just want to call attention that there's a National Day of Action on February the 20th, 2012. It's a mass demonstration at San Quentin's East Gate. And what we're demanding is the end of mass incarceration and stand in solidarity with the bottom 1% of the 99%. We're meeting at 10 a.m. at Oscar Grant Plaza from noon to 3. And for more information, the website is occupy4prisoners.org. And their Facebook page is occupy4prisoners. That's the number 4, the Roman numeral 4. Or, no, it's the one with the, I don't know what you call those numbers. The ones that
Arabic,
we normally
write. Arabic number
Arabic
4.
Numbers, sorry.
Yeah.
Arabic numbers.
Anything else, Neil, you want to say or comment on?
Yeah, Well, I just want to say very briefly, it's not exactly fair to compare Santa Cruz to Oakland. Our demographic is very different.
Very different.
Students, they're a lot, very, much more diverse than we are. But I did want to ask Michael, what do you see, what direction do you see Occupy Santa Cruz taking in the future, and what would you like to see it do?
I don't know. I know on Wednesdays, in varying parts of Santa Cruz, I've been out of the loop. I've been in Oakland for a week, so I've been missing what's been going on here in Santa Cruz. But they've been having community events, getting members of the community involved and engaged. I would encourage you to go to the Occupy Santa Cruz website. Forgive me for not knowing this. I've been out of the loop. But the direction, I'm not sure. I know that there's a lot of energy being put into foreclosed homes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of projects. There's Operation Mediation, Occupy Mediation. There's I talked to Ayla before the show. She gave me some specific stuff that's coming up.
There's a meditation working group planning an event.
March 1st, Occupy Education with UCSC. Foreclosure March, March 11th. Art show in April. And May 1st, some kind of general strike happening in solidarity with other Occupies. That doesn't really answer your question, though, Neil. You're asking, what do you see happening with Occupy Santa Cruz? That's what you're asking, right? In terms of what, you know, they're meeting four times a week now in general assemblies.
Well, I mean in the future. What, Michael and Robert, of course, what do you see? What do you see Occupy Santa Cruz doing in the future, and what would you like to see?
Well, I guess I want us to consider the community that we live in. And if we're not getting a lot of people interested in foreclosures, I would like us to return to the theme of other oppressed people, especially the homeless, because I believe this is an instance of triage. You have to treat your most the people that are hurting the most, and then you...
And that was Bathroom Spears Broadsides from either 1 or 2 weeks ago. I'm not quite sure which. I want to thank Daryl for putting that on. Coming up next on 101.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, is this week's edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides from your friendly neighborhood felon Uncle Robert, still at large. Actually, I'm not a felon, but that seems to be the opinion of the district attorney's office. We'll be talking a little bit about that and about 35 other people who are now allegedly going to be charged with felonious conduct. Stay tuned on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Wake from our oppression.
And that was Phil Free, Flames of Discontent, on his album, Just Kidding, Him, Skidmark, Bob, and Spirit, Any Donation Accepted. Actually, that was also what they were trying to put out on the streets as they struggled to survive and make a little rent money off this CD in the 90s, and harassed by the police for doing so. Sometimes arrested, I believe. So as mentioned before, you are tuned to Free Radio or FreakRadio.org, www.FreakRadio.org. This is also 101.3 FM, in case you happen to be listening to us on the air. That, I guess that's one of the reasons we're here. We could always sit at home and podcast or stream, but the idea is to get out to a broader population of folks who are driving, have to go back and forth from their jobs to their rented hovels or homes. I don't mean to demean anybody's place of living. I actually like where I live, and you know, even when I live in modest circumstances, I like it anyway. I mean, when a home is home, particularly if it's away from the rain and outside the wind. My main focus often on this show is addressing the rights of people or lack of rights of people who are outside, and that's what I. Maybe it's what I'm most familiar with, at least in terms of some of the history of it, in terms of the current laws, in terms of accounts I get from people who are on the streets. And it sort of pisses me off as well. So I'm going to be playing some tapes today. Mostly these are going to be from earlier times, because I have been kind of occupied, so to speak, particularly the last day or two, with these new indictments that have come down from the district attorney's office. Yesterday, there were a list of 10 names was released. I guess 11, actually. I was on it. And there's also a news story claiming there are going to be 36, maybe more, maybe total, of people who are supposedly engaging in vandalism, conspiracy, and trespass at 75 River Street on November 30th or thereabouts and shortly thereafter. And I'm one of those accused. I haven't really written a lot about this particular most recent development, these felony indictments. There are two felonies and two misdemeanors charged. But I'm hoping to do that. Attorneys, of course, will advise you if you are charged or arrested, don't say anything. And that's often very good advice. However, the problem that I have is that since I'm always talking about this issue anyway on the air, I've talked about it plenty, and I'm kind of, my laundry's hanging out there. If it is dirty laundry, I don't think it is. I think it's clean, and I think it's pretty straightforward. I think the attempt to take over a vacant building by people, which I was not a part of, I was a reporter. I wasn't a person who was barricaded inside. I was a person who was reporting on it for Free Radio, and you can hear my reports there. And I think because of that, and because of the favorable reports I had, and the criticism I had of police actions, I suspect that may be the reason I was targeted, because I can't really imagine why they would accuse me of vandalism, or conspiracy to engage in vandalism, or even trespass, because there were hundreds of people who went into that building, including city council members, city manager, other media, Santa Cruz Patch people, I mean, you name it. Police did not attempt to stop us or warn us that it was illegal to be there. There were no posted signs on the occasions when I went in. And that simply seemed to me to be a pretty straightforward reality that you don't want to waste a lot of taxpayer money contesting, even if you don't like what I say on the radio or what I write, even if I am critical of Chief Vogel's use of 90 to 120 police and his agency and allied agencies to destroy the survival campground and survival gear of between 100 and 200 homeless people with giving them no alternative. Even if I... If I attack his platooning police at City Hall that same day, December 8th, and blocking people from getting into city council offices in order to simply to talk with single people, we're not talking masses of people with torches and weapons. We're talking about individuals trying to... I was trying to get access to a public record that I'd requested from the city some days before. And I also earlier wanted to talk to Parks and Rec boss Danette Shoemaker, who is the person who unilaterally declared that there was some sort of imminent emergency at the campground of 2 months ago, a homeless-run campground that had survived quite well for 2 months, I would say with a crime rate considerably lower than had been the case in past years or in different places around the city, with a community kind of forming there, which I think authorities found threatening, and also a form of self-empowerment and self-help going on that the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as I call the Homeless Services Center run by Monica Martinez, simply doesn't have, even though they spend huge amounts of money compared to the amount of money that was spent at the San Lorenzo campground next to Occupy Santa Cruz. So I can't get inside the mind of Kevin Vogel, the police chief, or District Attorney Bob Lee, or his minions who have decided they want to spend more money and attack the lives and work of many of us who are journalists. If you look on this list of the 11 people who were cited, you'll find three video journalists, one blogger, you'll find, seven people out of that group are involved actively and primarily in journalism. Two of them were arrested at their homes and taken to jail, even though the police knew, as I found out later, that as when I was informed there was an arrest warrant out for me yesterday, that if you walk into the county courthouse, I should say the county building next to the courthouse and go into the court window, you can get the arrest warrant recalled, set a court date, and appear in court. No, this was punitive action by the police who went after people that were permanent residents here. They're not about to flee. They went out. They publicly were out there doing media. They were taken to jail and held on $5,000 bail. Now, Judge Simons reduced that bail and released Becky Johnson this morning. But she had to spend the night in jail. The people who came, the deputies and DAs who came to her house, which was outside the city limits, without any warning, without giving her a chance to drive into town to get her warrant dealt with, were acting in, you might say, a callous manner. But it's not so much I do kind of hold these deputies accountable for what they did to her and what was done to Alex DeRosi as well, who was also arrested at his house as he was conferring with a lawyer trying to get down to deal with just to sign up for a court date. I wondered if I was going to be simply arrested on the street and heard sort of rumor later that police were disappointed that they hadn't been able to arrest me. You know, and you might say, well, come on, Robert, you know, you're always giving the police a bad time. They have the right to give you a bad time. And the answer is no, they don't. I don't get paid to give the police a bad time with taxpayer money. I do this because I think that monitoring the police department is a really important function and something that I feel strongly about. Now, the police department is supposed to be engaged in enforcing laws and protecting and serving, you know, that sort of thing. And I don't believe it does that generally, particularly for lower-income people, and definitely not for homeless people. And I make that point eminently clear in every broadcast that I give. And it's important that I do that because there's a mythology that Don Lane, our mayor, is very compassionate about the homeless and really cares about them. And he's going to work on a program so there'll be 100 homes sometime, somewhere, somehow. In the meantime, he'll keep the anti-homeless laws in force and support the police department's activities as they go along. There's a kind of a liberal mythology about Santa Cruz, which I constantly try to, go through, look at the reality underneath. And I also try to be fair. When police officers act well toward homeless people, when there's what I regard as unusual respect shown, or it's hard for police officers to do that because they're working in the middle of a system that is anti-homeless. But they are indeed working there. I mean, nobody is forcing them to take those jobs, although admittedly the economy is for shit and who wants to be out of work, no question about it. But there has to come a point where you hold people accountable for what they do and understand that when you enter a paramilitary system like any police force, you lose your individuality to a large extent, you lose your opportunity to make real choices, and you become identified with and a cog in that machine. And insofar as you do, you ought to be held accountable for the crimes of that machine against the community, against poor people, and so forth. I think the community's behavior toward the people at 75 River Street, towards Occupy Santa Cruz, toward the homeless community generally in the last several decades has been criminal. People have been told they cannot engage in survival sleeping in this community. That has been upheld by individuals in black robes paid over $100,000 a year, judges, with a straight face. Judge Gallagher has a man in jail right now, Gary Johnson, who I've talked about and who I'm going to be playing some older tape on from last month, when he was talking about why he was sleeping on a bench outside the county building with a sign that said, I'm trying to remember the exact wording of the sign. Sleep is not a crime. Probably they arrested him for false advertising. They told him, no, you're wrong, buddy. Sleep is a crime, and we're going to prove it to you. But he is right. Sleep is not a crime. It's a need. And if it's a crime in Santa Cruz, that's a crime. And that's what we need to address. And we haven't. It isn't being addressed. But there are some groups that are trying to address it. I've always been sympathetic and tried to raise, amplify the voices of those groups because I think they're on the right track. And I've also headed one of those groups, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which meets every Wednesday, still, at least as long as I'm at liberty. And I have a court date now for February 21st in Department 7 at 8:15 for an arraignment on, again, four ridiculous charges, particularly two felony charges, conspiracy to commit vandalism and conspiracy to trespass. I believe those are the charges. I may sound a little glib about this. You know, I may sound a little easygoing. I'm not. They scared the hell out of me when I heard about these charges. I've never been charged with a felony in my life. I've never been convicted of a misdemeanor. That's not technically true. I think in 1990, with a bunch of other people who did an occupation, we were serving food on the property of leased property that the downtown had. The downtown merchants had to dramatize the fact that the then mayor, I think it was Marty Wormhout, was not coming through on the city's promise to provide a certified kitchen for Jane Immler, Calamity Jane, who was trying to serve homeless people food at a city-funded operation. She couldn't do it because she did not have access to a certified kitchen. So we were doing direct public civil disobedience. We were arrested for trespass. I served, I think, a day in jail and was convicted of a misdemeanor trespass at that point. But generally speaking, the juries have either said no to the attempts of the court of the city council or the police to arrest me for what I do, or the juries have been hung, or the charges have been dropped, or I've been arrested and charges have never been filed. Now, in this situation, we have a hardening climate, it looks like, here in Santa Cruz. I mean, I'm still not sure, and perhaps Chief Vogel or one of his confidants can call in and tell me, he's our police chief, what's going on there. I hear a knock at the door. Maybe that's the chief. Let me see if he wants to. Is that you, Chief Vogel? Good. Come in, please. All right. No, it's not Chief Vogel, I'm afraid. It's some guy with a beard. Well, actually, it is a very very good show on Tuesday nights. Or I'm not sure if he's still doing it or not. Are you still doing that show, Free?
Am I up? Yeah, I was here.
I'll just grab a microphone, and you're not up yet, but you will be if you play your cards right.
My volume's up. Not yet. Really, Robert? I just came by in case they arrested you. Can I have your show?
Well, you know, I don't know. It's going to cost you. You know,
I'm
mean,
not paying your dues or anything.
You just want to take over my show. Are you a friend of Chief Vogel's by any chance? I don't really know what's going on. Well, I know that you have regular, in the last month, you've interviewed a number of people, some of whom, have you not? I mean, or at least, you haven't? You're shaking your head in a...
No, I haven't hardly done a show.
I thought... I called in. I know that guy Robert Norris was on your show.
Oh, yeah, but he's not really cheap.
No, that's true. Well, I may soon be on my way to becoming an unperson with this indictment.
Yeah,
you've
got to become a corporation to be a person these days.
Well, I don't know if I have the wherewithal to be a corporation. Anyway, for those of you who want to join this jolly conversation, you can call in at 427-3772. That's the number here, 427-3772. I'm going to take a brief musical break while I can orient my new guest on appropriate behavior in the studio.
What, you want some hate speech?
And we'll see what...
I hate those cops.
See, this is an example of the kind of inflammatory rhetoric that probably has driven Chief Vogel and perhaps District Attorney Bob Lee to these kinds of charges.
Hey, they were made to look like fools at 75 River, so they have to get their revenge.
Well, I talked about that at the time, and we'll discuss that more. But first, let's hear a little more from that that Man About song, Phil Free, Skidmark Bob, and of course the she never seems to be in the lead, but Spirit is the third member of the trio of Just Kiddin from the late mid '90s. Here's a song called Burn. That was Phil Free and Burn. Again, another one from that great album, one of my favorites, Any Donation Accepted. So, in the studio with me is Tangerine Dream Team, one of those two. Free, who's poring over my indictment with my charges, and he will no doubt come up with a learned opinion soon. I don't have an attorney at the moment, so if any attorneys want to step forward and deal with this horse shit, I'm happy to accept their... Well, at least I will review them and see if they meet my high standards. Let's see about that. You need an attorney when you got felonies, or else you have to spend all your time in the law library boning up, or, I don't know, all your time praying or something, because there's quite an array of power amassed against you. So, I'm going to play... a little bit from something earlier that happened, much earlier actually. There's stuff happening around foreclosures still, in spite of these indictments. And indeed, even as I speak, for those who are interested, there is a general assembly happening. I believe it's at the courthouse tonight. I don't know. It might be indoors at the Resource Center for Nonviolence over on Broadway. But as far as I know, it's either at the courthouse or over there at, What's the address of Resource Center? Do you know?
Which one?
You know where the meetings are held. The old Resource Center.
I don't know.
518, 514, 509. 509 Broadway, that sounds right.
Just up from about half a block from Ocean.
Yeah, it's a half a block from Ocean, and it's... but, I mean, I'd check if you were interested in kind of checking out this assembly. And it should be a heated one there. One of the problems that's created when the authorities crack down is that activists start blaming each other. Instead of, forming a united front and saying, screw this shit, they start, attacking each other as, this is your fault, and you did this wrong, and so forth and so on. And
what the fuck did you do, Robert? You got everybody busted.
Yeah, well, let me turn up your mic so you can say that more with more clarity.
What the fuck did you do, Robert? You got everybody busted. It's all your
amazing.
Fault. It's right here. Yeah,
it says it. The complaint is...
you, who had no idea about 75 years.
I actually really didn't know what the hell. I heard rumors that there... We knew there was a march that day, and we were walking, but... I was at the march.
I saw you at the march.
I was at the march. You know, and when other people entered the building, I also...
I pointed out to you, Robert, where are all the radicals?
I think you and I were walking and talking together in that march.
We were on the steps at the courthouse.
Yeah, I thought we were walking... Maybe it was another march you and I were walking and talking.
No, we were on the steps. I saw you there.
But in any case, I think it was a great idea to try to raise issues that here's an abandoned... a piece of property that's being held for profit by Wells Fargo, vacant for 3.5 years.
I heard it was Barry Swinson.
Well, yes, but I think that Wells Fargo is still the owner. I think Barry Swinson, somebody leased it from them, is my understanding.
For nothing? Just to sit there?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what the hell they were doing. And maybe, I've heard different stories about it. And that's one of the problems with this. If you want to talk about the problems with this occupation, some of it had to do with lack of clarity, preparation, and publicity around the actual owners of the property, the specifics of the community center that people... We're intent on setting up there, and for 3 days tried to.
The reason it got occupied because it was right across the river from the occupation. It was so convenient.
I don't know, because I wasn't.
Well, we weren't part of the conspiracy.
There was a time when I was talking about this even more freely, and I wasn't involved. Maybe the people didn't trust me, or I was. They didn't come to me for my advice. I try to put the information out there for sure. But there are those who felt that, they would have been better had this occupation happened in a foreclosed home.
Well, that's going on right now.
And that, in fact, is what I'm about to play some tape on. Although this is a guy who actually spoke at city council about this. His name is Ken, about his home being foreclosed on. But I think there is another foreclosed home that is actually now being used by occupiers and has been for about a month as they prepare to... they made it public for a while, then for some reason it was withdrawn from public attention. But I think it's going to be done. That's going to happen again. And what we need to do, of course, is I've talked about this before, and I think there was a little of this, people showing up at these foreclosure sales.
That was one of the things we were going to do at Occupy, because they do sell on the steps around from the courthouse.
Yeah, I was wondering. What, I mean, it's
1:30 on, but it's not every day. You never know.
No, I think it's every other Friday or something. Or
it could be every day.
I'm sure it's scheduled. It shows you how.
I asked the woman that's right there by where they do it, and she says it's every day, but he doesn't always have houses to sell. So.
I say, well, just bring along some money and get ready to purchase a house. I understand there are houses at bargain prices these days. Anyway, let's hear a little bit of Ken talking about the foreclosure situation that's affected him. I've heard this, I've heard stories of people just getting ripped off by the banks, not just in the newspapers, but personal stories from people who came to Occupy Santa Cruz and talking about it locally. And
They're there to make a profit. If they can make a profit off somebody by ripping them off, they're going to do that, as long as it's legal. And there's plenty of ways to rip people off legally.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Well, let's hear a little bit.
That's capitalism for you.
Yeah, and if anyone has thoughts and they want to put them out on the air, at the risk possibly of some kind of indictment, give a call to 427-3772.
Get an anonymous call.
You can be anonymous here if you'd like. Who knows? We'll see what Anonymous has to say about this at some point. And just as I'm about to put on the tape. What do I hear but the ding, ding, ding of the phone in the studio? So let's hope that this caller actually wants to be on the air. We'll put you on if you don't watch out. Here we go. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and the well-known and much-beloved Free.
Actually, I don't want to be on the air. I'd like to
you know, this is very disappointing.
And I was waiting until you put a tape on to do so.
I was afraid something like this was going to happen in my show. Another public embarrassment. You have to add that to the humiliation I got yesterday, don't you?
Yes.
All right, well, hang
on.
Don't go away. We'll take you off the air, but we will put you on the sideline. And we will resume a little... from Ken, a foreclosed guy who's talking about this issue.
Hey, Ken, what's happening with your home?
Oh, I'm still hanging in there,
looking for the bank loan. Any quick updates for Free Radio?
We're just trying to, on my particular situation, which is complicated, we're trying to do a short sale with someone that would rent it or lease it back to me. But there is some developments coming up about our home that may be occupied soon.
Wow.
There'll be more details here in the next few days.
So
I'm having a meeting tomorrow.
I missed the General Assembly. It looks like the Roxanne's taking the food away, so I missed the edibles. How did the General Assembly go tonight?
It was good. The biggest crowd, I think, since the beginning of the year or the new year.
Well, yeah, it's been relatively small for the last 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
And cold weather. It's a little warmer today.
Right.
How many people were here, would you estimate?
I saw, maybe 30, something like that, between 20 and 30.
Any decisions made?
I wasn't here for the whole thing, so you should probably ask someone that was here for the whole thing.
You're here now, aren't you?
Yeah, and I found out what I needed to find out about the foreclosure group. And
when are they meeting next?
They're meeting tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
And of course, that was some months ago, but I believe the foreclosure group...
show up on Thursday.
The foreclosure group actually is, if you want to find out when any of these subcommittees meet, go to the Occupy Santa Cruz website, and there is a relatively current, it's actually more current than it used to be, listing of those meeting times, places, and groups.
Well, the Huff meets tomorrow as well at 10 o'clock at the Joe's Pizza in case you want coffee.
Actually, we now meet at 10 o'clock, but not at Joe's Pizza.
You got kicked out of there, didn't you?
No, we were simply told we had to pay more money, and we decided it was a little beyond our budget. We meet at the Sub Rosa Cafe, and that's every Wednesday. You haven't been showing up there, Free, to the Huff meeting.
It's too early.
Yeah. Give me a break.
Yeah, I'm gotta get it fun.
All right, well, let's continue hearing some of this ancient tape, which I think eventually it moves into more, I think, relevant territory. At least I hope so.
It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so there'll be more developments and information after that.
Are there any plans to assist another person whose home is being foreclosed on?
Yeah, that's what
they're going to be talking about.
And I don't know details, but there'll be more details coming probably at the GA tomorrow or the day after.
Fair enough. We've been talking with
Ken Foster.
Thank you, Ken. Smoker, what happened at the General Assembly that the public needs to know about?
Chaos.
Now, what kind of chaos are we talking about here?
Creative, constructive chaos?
Well, I see that the grass has suddenly been made available to the public for the first time in 3 or 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the grass has been opened up.
That's the grass on both sides of the cement area where the General Assembly usually meets.
And actually, I believe this was a point at which, if you drive by the front of the courthouse, the Water Street side, you will notice that there is an orange meshing off of the whole grass areas on both sides of the cement area that leads to an unused entrance of the courthouse. I guess it's sort of an emergency exit. It used to be a main entrance 30 or 40 years ago. It was used, but now it's not. And that's where the General Assemblies of Occupy Santa Cruz were held and are still held to some extent, though they're held now, I think.
Tuesdays
and Thursdays. I'm told that, as you can hear from that loud and booming voice from Free, from Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6 o'clock. And that's, it is happening right now. But
I'm going to head it over there as soon as it becomes illegal.
Well, you're talking luckily into a mic that didn't hear you, but I think they could probably hear your booming voice across the room there.
I'll be headed over to the GA meeting at 7 o'clock when it becomes illegal to be there.
Yes, and that's really the point I was going to make, that, you know, after, as you do know, those of you who are listening have been watching this and kind of, maybe it's becoming a sort of background noise, all these curfews, when you kind of have to jump through these hoops and adapt to it. I guess that's the whole point of this kind of conditioning system. there has been a curfew at the county, unprecedented curfew at the county, that's now becoming day-to-day precedent for no particular reason, other than the police want to stop the gathering of, specifically, Occupy Santa Cruz. That has to be what it is.
Yeah.
There's been no significant property damage. At one point, there was a window broken, and they wanted to remove. A no parking sign was stolen at one point from the meters that were suddenly had no parking at any time all over the place, up and down that street. Not because any construction was being done, but again, the purpose seemed to be eliminating and making it difficult to come to Occupy Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
You know, and
when the broken window was probably in response to this kind of
thing. I think the broken window was in response to a very particular act. I think the Octodome was taken, which was the structure that was taken on December 4th that people had built.
But you don't hear any outrage about people's stuff being stolen by the police other than on free radio or in eBay. You don't hear about it in regular media. That's the real crimes that were going on there. It was the police.
Indeed. It's sort of like the echo chamber in the studio. You and I will echo that back and forth. But you're right. I mean, that's what I was saying before you came in. And it was saying on every show probably for the last 25 years, or last 15 years. I don't think I've been on the air for 25 years. What I'm saying, though, is that you hear on the tape I mentioned that the orange mesh, the grass was suddenly open. There was a point at which people simply took down the orange mesh. And that is to say, not the employees, but the community members who were there just said, fuck this shit, this is public space, we are going to open it up to the community again. And they did for, I think, the purpose of during the assembly, and the police did nothing. But then, of course, the next day was up again, and I don't think it's been removed since. So there is a kind of a... I think, undue respect for the kinds of restrictions on access to public space that police departments, administrative agencies, Susan Mariello, the chief administrative officer,
that's all her fault.
Are doing. Well, she is ultimately the ultimate authority. I mean,
all her fault.
Well, I don't know if she actually does much, day-to-day monitoring of that situation, but it's certainly,
it's her responsibility.
It is her responsibility. Yeah, I would have to agree that that's where you have to hold her responsible. Similarly, the city manager, Martine Bernal, is responsible for the shutting down of the areas all over the city. Danette Shoemaker, who is the head of Parks and Rec, who has an unusual amount of power in shutting down all kinds of areas all over the city that aren't, you wouldn't normally think of as parks, like, landscaping along the levee, parts of Pacific Avenue. They're under the authority of the Parks and Rec Department. And, of course, there are huge, huge parts of the city that are parks, that are green-belt areas like the Poganip,
yeah,
that they have unbridled discretion over. And it's not only that, like, the Parks and Rec Commission has. The Commission actually is kind of powerless. It is only now allowed to advise, and Danette Shoemaker is authorized to close down areas at her whim after consulting with the Parks and Rec Commission. It doesn't have to even get their approval. And, of course...
Well, what's the difference between the two?
Well, they used to have to get votes from the Parks and Rec where they would close down areas, like the town clock. They weren't able to post those signs in 1993 or 92.
Is she the head of Parks and
Rec
or something?
She's the head of Parks and Rec. Yeah, Danette Shoemaker is the Parks and Rec boss.
There used to be a council, but now there's just a head?
Well, there is still a Parks and Rec Commission, but the law changed in terms of how much she has to go to them and to what extent she has to consult with them. It said that she will consult with them, but it doesn't say that she will seek a vote from them. It used to be, before they would close down any area, the Parks and Rec Commission would have to vote it. That could be appealed to the city council. In fact, we did that when they tried to close down the town clock and set up hours there.
Sounds none like, of this is probably illegal. She still probably does have to go.
Well, the thing I noticed is even with that, we have to consult with the Parks and Rec, which means just talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
She closed City Hall without even talking to them.
Yeah.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio with your favorite friendly felon, Uncle Robert here?
Alleged felon.
That's correct, alleged felon. Wait, I can't hear you. Sorry, say, caller, are you there?
John Teal King.
John, are you a felon, John Teal King?
Not unless you want to charge me with conspiracy to build a teepee.
Conspiracy to what?
Conspiracy to build a teepee.
To build a teepee. Were you one of...
Make no admissions.
You built an illegal structure.
You may or may not have helped build a teepee.
I see. Actually, that was one of the fine accomplishments of the Occupy Santa
really
Cruz.
Nice, you know,
they had a great 22-foot-high teepee.
Looked like a... Native American.
That was a run of Robert Blind Bear Facer's greatest achievements. But anyway, what's up, John? What do you got for us today?
Oh, I just wanted to have a brief announcement that there's going to be a... You know, I don't know if you've heard about the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement.
Tell me.
I call it the mother of SOPA.
Tell me about it.
Give us Did you hear details. That? You're fading out.
Give us the details.
Okay, basically what ACTA does is it's an international treaty which does some of the same thing that SOPA does. It would encourage internet service providers to monitor your every move on the internet. And there's currently some enabling legislation, or something that looks like enabling legislation, is sponsored by Lamar Smith. It would require internet service providers to keep track of your data about all websites you visited for the past 18 months. Little fun things like that.
So,
are you there?
You can't even be a free with your fingers in your own home. I mean, they can't. They've stopped you from walking outside. You walk into a vacant bank building, and you'll end up with a felony indictment. You know,
yeah.
Now you can't even use. You go to the wrong website, and you're in trouble. I mean,
yeah,
tell me it isn't true, John.
I mean, basically, what the main focus of the website monitoring is to make sure that you don't commit copyright infringement. That's the alleged purpose of it. And also, the Lamar Smith's bill is supposed to be protecting children against pornography. Some kind of bullshit like that, but that's what they're saying.
Uh-huh. It's for the children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're having a protest at San Jose City Hall, 4th and East Santa Clara Street, on Saturday, February 11th. Which is in solidarity with the protests are happening all across Europe on the same day. Because Europe is the last stop as ACTA makes its way around the world, being signed by who knows how many different countries. If Europe doesn't sign on to it, it dies. At least that's the hope. So we're protesting on February 11th to try to get Europe to not sign the treaty.
Time and place?
12 o'clock noon. Saturday, February 11th, at 4th and East Santa Clara Street, which is the San Jose City Hall Plaza.
Huh. Is Occupy San Jose still hanging around City Hall?
Yeah, and Occupy San Jose endorsed it, too.
So they are still holding general assemblies?
Yes, they are, Wednesday and Sunday.
And how are
Wednesday
they doing?
Wednesday at 7 and Sunday at noon.
And what's happening with the last General Assembly? Have you been there recently? Or?
Well, I went there to a Wednesday General Assembly, and then the Sunday, the 5th of February. I was kind of disappointed with the Wednesday General Assembly because it degenerated into chaos because they had a dispute about are we representing Occupy San Jose accurately on the web? Because some people will have the impression that Bank Friday was an Occupy event when it's no longer officially an Occupy event. And so there was some confusion about that, and people going back and forth about that.
Nobody's been indicted on any federal felony charges over there yet, as far as you know?
No conspiracy to camp or anything like that.
You know, I'm thinking that, you know, Santa Cruz may actually now have one unique distinction of having issued the most felony charges against people.
I don't even think Occupy Oakland has got that many felony
no,
charges.
No, we're leading the field here, man.
Ridiculous.
I mean, it's...
A lot of people went to Oakland.
Yeah, I guess they wanted to get away from the dangers of Santa Cruz. Who would have thought, you know? I mean, and of course, we're making light of this because otherwise we would be, you know, there'd be no entertainment in the show whatsoever, really.
Yeah, really. I mean,
so, you know,
actually, to be honest, this is one of the first times in a while I've tuned into the Thursday show. A lot of times I listen to the Sunday show, but not the Thursday show. So,
well, what's wrong
you guys
with the Thursday
were arrested,
show?
the other night before, I decided to tune in.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Thursday show is actually more palatable for some because you don't have to sit through 3.5 or 4 hours of me fumbling with the tapes. You know, I mean,
right.
To the audience, you should definitely not watch the Sunday show and listen to it.
But anyway, the listing is on indiebay.org also. If you just go to the main site, it's the listing for the protest that I'm talking about is on the
So we're talking
site.
About an ACTA, A-C-T-A, a protest against ACTA, which is a international treaty-based extension of SOPA, which is the attempt to force Internet service providers to follow your every finger motion. And that's going to happen noon on Saturday, February 11th at San Jose City Hall. And I guess, again, my interest in Occupy San Jose is, do they move their tents at night or disband them or go home?
Well, they don't have tents there anymore.
I see.
They occasionally have a tent set up merely as a protest symbol. They have the Angry Birds graphic on the front of the tent, but they don't have it there very often anymore.
You say Angry Bird or Angry Birch?
Angry Bird. Huh. You ever seen the Angry Birds on your cell phone or at the mall with the... You know, little stuffed toys that they have at the mall.
No, I've seen the American Eagle.
It's like a bird with, like, big eyes that looks really angry. That kind of symbol.
Don't know. But, you know, okay, I mean, I'll believe you. It just doesn't ring a bell.
Anyway, they have that kind of symbol on their tent.
Okay.
Basically, just a big angry eye with a flap open, kind of like it's angry or something.
So, John, you've been living in San Jose now for almost a decade or half a decade, something like that?
I've been living there since 2005.
And so you've been there for 6 years, 7 years now.
Yeah.
Comparing activism now with, let's say, a year ago, would you say that there's been a rise in activism?
Yes.
Well, we did have the impeachment brigade going to Zoe Loughran's office every week during the Bush era. So.
No, I'm talking about a year ago, not 5 years ago, a year ago.
Yeah. Well, there might have been a little bit of an increase since a year ago. But even Occupy is not that big a movement, really. I mean, they have, I mean, at least on Super Bowl Sunday, they only had like 12 or 15 people there at the General Assembly.
Well, there was Super Bowl Sunday. Come on, man.
Yeah. And then most often they have more like 40. I guess that's the, because the guy who printed my flyers for me printed 40 flyers because he figured that's how many people.
Well, look at it this way. Isn't that like 12 or 15 or 40 more people than there was a year ago at San Jose City Hall?
Yeah, I mean, at least to show up there every other day or every 3 days, you know, like they do on Wednesdays and Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
That's more activity than there was before.
Yeah, and there still is a sort of an accessible process that isn't fundamentally closed and sort of...
Yeah, it was for a while. I thought I might not be able to present my petition, but turned out it wasn't a problem to present my idea for them to endorse my protest.
And they did.
And they did, yeah.
Very good. I mean, I know that, you know, it certainly seems a step up from trying to get the city council to endorse stuff, which is what you were doing.
Right.
You were doing that about 10 or 15 years ago. Although, you know, I'm glad the city council endorsed, I don't know, was it a new trial for Mumia or something at one point?
Yeah. And I guess the current status with Mumia is he's now in general population. He got to hug and kiss his wife for the first time in 30 years.
Yeah, well, it's waiting. That's quite something, actually.
Yeah.
Of course, he's, you know, that's for Mumia. We got to think about all the other guys who don't get the publicity that Mumia gets.
I guess there was it announced on your show or was it in something else that I heard that they're having that general, protest on the 20th?
There is a protest, Occupy Prisons, I think, that's happening on the 20th.
Yeah.
That's,
are they going to have that at San Quentin, or is it going to be in Oscar Grant Plaza?
I'm going now to Indy Bay to see if I can find out.
So I'd be more willing to go to San Quentin, frankly, than Oscar Grant Plaza, considering the track record at the Oakland
Police. Well, let's see. There coming up is let's see here. There's actually it's the 20th we're talking about.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's not in the East Bay. It's Establishing Foreclosure Prevention Zones, a KPFA teach-in, is 7 to 9 p.m., and that's happening. There's actually a lot of stuff happening. Long Hall Oral History Night, People's Park Struggles on the 19th. This is stuff from, you know, some weeks away, but if you look at stuff coming up directly, not so much around here, but Like tonight, Occupy Oakland is hosting a forum on police actions. They are doing a conference that I found interesting, and in fact, I proposed to the General Assembly here as a more as an announcement that we do something similar, that we establish a forum to discuss. This was before these indictments came down, which I think has made it all the more pressing. For those who just tuned in, I've been indicted on two felonies and two misdemeanors for alleged conspiracy, vandalism, and trespass at the 75 River Street building on November 30th, December 1st, December 2nd, around there. Or maybe it's, anyway, that general period of time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's stuff happening at this forum, which I think we could emulate on the Oakland police, of course, as people know, they arrested hundreds of people. And then they released them all the next day without charges in this, you know, clear, unconstitutional violation. It's in Santa Cruz, I guess they're more cautious and selective. I mean, they must believe at the DA's office that they're acting constitutionally. They must. I mean,
although with those 400 arrests, they have the right to charge them later. I forget how long it is before the statute of limitations runs out on that.
That is,
might be up to a year.
That is, that's true, but the fact of the matter is there seems to be an evidence that they were told to leave, but they had no place to go, and or they weren't even told to leave. They were just arrested. They were kettled. Mm-hmm. It was a direct attempt to stop protest. I haven't heard any contrary accounts that said, "Oh no, they were told to leave at such and such a place and time." And
no,
again,
I think I have heard on the mainstream news that they claim that they were told to leave, and they claim they had videos showing that they were told to leave.
Oh, I'd like to see that. Maybe if you run that by me, I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I don't know where it would be. Where I don't know where to find it. But
yeah, I know there were claims that
they were.
I was part of that rally earlier, like, you know, in the day, and there were warnings to leave at two different points. And people did leave. They, you know, we backed off, and you know, we didn't want to be tear gassed and smoke bombed, and you know, however unconstitutionally they were stopping us from being present, that we did it. We backed off. At least I did. And you know, but the claim, I guess, like they did later on, was hours later at a second rally. They claimed, well, you guys were warned 6 hours ago at a different location to disperse. I mean, you know, maybe there's, anyway, so
maybe that's what they're talking about, was that,
you know,
6 hours prior.
Maybe they're going to come down with, you know, misdemeanors and felonies in a few months using the Santa Cruz model. I mean, you know, our DA's office could become a model across the country for how to deal with, you know, indignant protesters. Anyway, well, thanks for calling in, John. Anything else you want to say?
Sure. I think we've got it covered. There's a couple of petitions you can sign by going to the Indy Bay event listing for the act of protest. It's on the, you know, it's on February 11th in the upper part of the page in red. Just go to indybay.org, click on act of protest and decolonize the internet, and then go to about the middle of the listing, and there's three petitions you can sign to try to stop ACTA and try to stop the Morris Smith's internet snooping bill.
All right. Well, thank you, man.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later.
And phone lines are open. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. Let's hear a little more from Phil Free. A little music might be nice with this opportunity. You know, if we can't dance, I don't want to go to your jail cells. So.
Slow as the poison's flow.
You are on Free Radio, caller. Hello.
Hi, Free Radio. Hey. Hi, Beth Obstier.
And this must be Lighthouse Linda LeMaster.
Yes, it is.
I know, because I just talked to you a moment ago. No surprises
also,
there.
It's my voice.
Yes. So, Linda, I know we've kind of talked a lot about your case, which, you know, you have misdemeanor charges of lodging coming up. I guess it's one count of lodging.
Yeah, I got a ticket that has one lodging charge.
I mean, you didn't even get jailed. I mean, this is, you know, old Becky Johnson's got you beat now. She's got two felonies and two misdemeanors for, what is it, serving coffee near Occupy the... I know she served coffee at Occupy Santa Cruz and was at the courthouse, and she might have... Did she serve coffee at 75 Monterey? I don't know. I don't know if they make any admissions on the...
I don't think so, no.
I don't know, but she's well known as a... She's a video journalist.
No, she didn't. I know she wasn't there that night.
Really? So you think that... Well, so anyway, I know she's charged with the same charges I am by the district attorney's office for allegedly vandalizing. Did you see Becky doing any vandalizing?
She wasn't there.
Oh.
What could she have vandalized?
So you're covering for Becky, eh, here
on... No, I'm not. I know she wasn't there. But, you know, I mean, I went down there that night, and I ended up spending the night across the street in the real Wells Fargo Bank, watching the whole show. The rest of the night after my visit. But
you mean you broke into the real Wells Fargo Bank and they still haven't caught you?
No, I didn't break in. I was in their parking lot.
Oh, I see.
And eventually I talked to some lady from KGO who thought of doing the same thing, but I beat her to it, so she put me on the air about what I thought about it all.
And why don't you describe your experience as you watched that whole thing? We never really interviewed you on the, you know, were you part of the march that went
no,
to the...
No, I wasn't part of the march.
Uh-huh.
When I went down there, it was after the police had come and gone.
Let me first orient people that this is an event that happened in, I guess it was November 30th, or maybe it was November 27th. I've got to get my calendar out. Let me, in any case...
The day of the big windstorm.
It was Wednesday. It was a Wednesday in late November, and there was a march from Occupy Santa Cruz. At first, it went to the bank at the corner of Ocean and Water Streets, and we talked about, you know, the fact that bankers... That large banks have taken extreme liberties, have been gotten huge amounts of bailout money that are continuing to sit on their on our bucks, I should say, instead of lending them out to, you know, get the economy going again, help poor people help even middle class people. That the banks seem to have a stranglehold on the economy, and that they're just getting bailed out at every turn. And we then march to this property at 75 River Street, which was it's a vacant property that I thought was owned by Wells Fargo. Previously it had been Coast Commercial Bank, I think. And then it was my understanding that people occupied the building. Now, I didn't see anybody break in. The claims were that that's part of the claims of these indictments, that there was a break in. And then that there was, there's a whole listing of things that they claim were done. Keys to enter the building, broke into the lockbox containing keys, entered the building, posted signs and banners, remained in the building after verbal warnings to leave, after written warnings to leave, physically blocked the entry of police into the building, brought items into the building to barricade and block doors and windows, barricaded and blocked doors and windows, brought items into the building to facilitate continued occupation, conducted meetings, repurposed and labeled rooms, gained access to the roof of the building, and posted people on the roof. Hoisted buckets of rocks to the roof of the building, utilized utilities inside the building, invited and regulated access to the building, and painted slogans and writing. These are the 17 points of count one of this indictment.
I saw nobody hoisting buckets of rocks, I swear.
You know, there were plenty of rocks around outside, I noticed. I was outside when the police were confronting people inside the building, and there were people blockading the building. I didn't see who they were. I mean, I think I did see who they were, but I don't have, you know, identification sense of who they were now at this point. You know, it's been some months. And, you know, I suppose, you know, that would be a basis for charging those people with... I think it would be wrong. I think it would be a mistake. But, I mean, you could conceivably do that with some sense of sanity and fastidiousness to the law. But many of us went into the building later with the police just standing there. They didn't stop us from going in and out. They didn't say, "Sir, you can't go in. This building is a trespass situation." There were no signs that said no trespassing. People went in and they held meetings there. Yes, they did. And I was there briefly for one of those meetings, for sure. I confess on the air. And I also interviewed some people inside. I also walked with Catherine Byers inside at one point. And I walked with a reporter I walked with other people inside the building. But, I mean, there was no indication that this was being regarded as a trespass by the police department at that time. So I was puzzled when Chief Vogel threatened me and said, "You're under investigation, you're going to be charged, or, you know, we're looking into your case, so people will be talking to you." Nobody ever talked to me, for one thing. But, the only thing I got was announcement there was an arrest warrant yesterday on these charges. Anyway, I'm sorry, I had to interrupt you with my long... What's that?
You got an announcement from the cops?
No, I got no announcement. When I walked on December 8th over to the Parks and Rec Department with a small group of people, we were outnumbered by the police. You may remember, you were there,
yeah,
in front of the Parks and Rec to talk to Danette Shoemaker and say, "What was the emergency that made you decide to destroy the campground for 100 to 200 people?" And she left town, and they hadn't really closed the offices. They locked it to the public. Employees kept going in and out. And City Hall was closed down to people, too. Vogel confronted me and, really had a kind of a scowl on his face. And I asked him, "Well, maybe you know what the emergency was." "I can't talk to you about that." And I said, "Well, maybe you can tell people where to go to get the property that you confiscated, or maybe give them some shovels so they can dig into the city dump where most of it is, because it was compacted on trucks and taken away." And he said, "You can go there to claim your property at the Parks Police Department." And I don't know. I don't know if anybody has actually been able to claim their property. I know that the Robert Facer has some pretty tall teepee poles that the police either took to the police department or.
Have you heard of anyone going to check with the city police?
I've only
heard of county contacts.
No, I have not, and I think that actually is an important thing that people should do. That if anyone listening to this broadcast should go down there. You have to go down there on Tuesday or Thursday, though. So you have to wait till next week because they have these absurdly limited hours. It seems designed to make it more and more difficult for people to reclaim their property, sort of with the message, "Fuck with us and we'll really fuck with you," or if you don't do anything, everything we say exactly as we want it, we'll confiscate your property and then we'll hold it for 5 days and maybe longer.
Designed for criminals and homeless people. It's another example of the cops wanting to be more than just the police, or they wouldn't make it so hard. I'm hoping there's still enough middle class people left in the Occupy movement here that maybe they will go down there and ask for their property and see how the police treat their things.
Well, I was described
different than the Constitution promises.
Sure. So. Well, I was. Good luck with that. I hope you're right. I've been trying to get people to go down there and claim their property for the last 2 months, and I don't know if anybody has. If they have, and you feel like talking about it online, do give a call to 427-3772 as soon as Linda hangs up, or try calling at 469-3119, 469-3119, if you want to join this conversation. Area code is 831 if you're outside the area, and you're invited to call in if you have some thoughts on this or anything we've been talking about for the last hour. But getting back to what we were talking about before, I would love to get your impressions of when you said you were watching this first night of the occupation of this vacant bank building, and it was vacant. I was owned,
I went down there later than the marchers.
When did you get
just before midnight?
So you went down there late at night, and what did you see?
What did I see? Boy, that's a blank loaded question.
Remember, the police are listening, so make
the building.
Educate the police. Go ahead.
I can't educate the police. I don't have any reason to think they're listening.
Well, you can educate the rest of us then. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was just telling you what I saw. So, inside, I thought it was wonderful. There was more than enough room. It looked like the place had been closed during a fire drill or something. I mean, there were still people's little packages of bubble gum and half-used tissues in the teller drawers, and a lot of stuff laying around. It sounds funny when the thing you read from the police warrant thing says all this damage. It was already a mess. I can't imagine they brought much stuff in from the outside unless they used it outside, because there were desks and walls, portable and otherwise, all around, strewn around the place.
And did you see any damage created by the protest?
I didn't see anything damaged. No. No.
And
no, I didn't see any damage. I did see people moving things. Somebody moved a couch. Somebody emptied a room, a little cubbyhole room. Somebody put a tent in the vault, which was standing open.
Did you see any no trespass signs?
No. No, I looked around for that on the outside. I didn't see any.
Did you see any police officers directing people to leave the building or go away? Or?
No, I missed all of that. If they did that when they first showed up, they must not have come back.
So my understanding is that there were people inside the building about close to midnight the first evening of the occupation, but there were no police officers in the area that said, leave this building, you're trespassing, or we're going to give you a trespassing ticket.
No, not the whole time I was down there. And
how long were you there for?
I wasn't in the building very long. I did a quick visit, kind of checking it all out, but I spent the rest of the night across the street or walking around the building.
Mm-hmm.
Across the street, meaning parked in the Wells Fargo parking lot.
Did you see police cars in the vicinity?
I think a couple times police cars drove by.
So,
like they were on River Street driving down toward the freeway. I didn't see anybody pull over there. I didn't see any police cars pull in. Twice I saw white vans. One of them turned out to be media.
My point is that the police were aware that there were people inside the building, correct?
Yes. Anybody who got close enough to look in the window would have been aware there were people there.
But the police
there were a lot of people there.
But the police did not enter the building while you were there and say,
no.
You got to go.
Or not even visit the outside.
Okay. So, I mean, that really has been the point of my discussion of this issue for the last, whenever it comes up on the radio show. You get people ranting and raving about how bad it is, and it's ruined everything, and it caused the police to overreact and destroy the homeless campground, although they, you know, it was quite clear they were planning to do so and had already gotten an injunction against it, or were fighting to get an injunction and an emergency evacuation order that when there was no emergency. So, I've heard, hang on a second, Lynn, let me finish my sentence. I've had, you know, that there was this spurious claim, I think was spurious, that the police were, you know, using this as a pretext. But in fact, gosh, I've lost my thought. Why don't you go ahead with what you're saying?
Oh, no. Well, I'll have to think of something to say, too. Well, I'm just going to talk about how I feel about the police in this mess. I'm going to write to them, or maybe I'll write to the Sentinel instead about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me that after broadcasting of the people to get anyone in the community to ID people in a picture outside of it that was put in the paper in newsprint quality and to call up and rat on these people, it's not a surprise that they have all the wrong names. You know, people are going to call in and ID their neighbors and the people they don't like that they recognize. And I would like to see the working notes that the police used when they gathered things in such a bodaciously sort of southern U.S. manner. This sounds like something from Florida or Alabama, the way they're doing it.
I think people should understand that what you're saying is that there is, on the police blog, there were pictures of the inside of the building, people inside the building, and the police were asking people on the blog to identify these people because there was criminal trespass involved and so forth. In fact, I wrote a letter which I've asked an attorney to send to Chief Vogel, but she was too overburdened to do it, but hopefully maybe this will happen in the future, which said, in essence, demanded that he retract his characterizations of the people inside as criminals, specifically characterizing me as a criminal. But since he apparently really does think I'm a criminal, and he's prepared to back it up with an indictment, that's going to have to be, you know, played out in court. Doesn't matter. He's a police chief and he's a police officer. And if he's willing to stand by what he says, that he thinks I'm engaging in criminal behavior or did engage in criminal behavior, and he wants to do this with a straight face, and the DA gives it the credibility that he is giving it by issuing arrest warrants yesterday, I think that's a very serious matter. I think it shows he's either... It seems to me he just doesn't... There's a lot of either personal hostility here, which he should not be allowing to control his behavior, or else there's some sort of political motivation, or maybe he's. Well, it's been suggested that he's under a lot of pressure from groups that, from like Take Back Santa Cruz, or Downtown Neighbors, or Santa Cruz Neighbors, or some
I'm
council.
I'm sure he's getting popular.
Some council
I'm
members.
Sure
this is what actually was said to me by someone who recently had a conference with Mayor Don Lane that. You know, oh, I didn't expect this to happen, but there's been a lot of pressure, you know, and so forth. So that may be the reason that he's actually doing this. Go ahead.
That is not a good enough reason for the police chief to just turn into a schoolyard think. That's why we have a police chief. He's supposed to be a leader among his men. It's not okay just because he's getting a lot of calls saying, "What are you doing? We're worried about property. We don't care about young people." You know, of course he's under pressure. That doesn't mean he's supposed to fold under that kind of pressure. It means the whole community wants to know what he's doing. And spitting out people's names that he expects the community to have antipathy with isn't an answer. It's not an adequate answer. It's not a safe answer. And for those of you who are being victimized, he needs to be exposed for that. It is not administrative procedure. And they probably don't have any is why he did it. But he needs to get it together. I'm going to be down there.
Hmm. Well, who knows? Maybe you'll be in the next round of indictments. They claim that there are 38 people that are... I think that's the number. Maybe it was 36. A number of people in a news story that, in total that have been, you know, identified as the vandals, conspirators, felons, and trespassers who will be called to account and subject to a lengthy court proceedings. Because these are going to be lengthy court proceedings unless they're dropped.
Or if somebody gets on their butt and files for Becky a
and
civil rights lawsuit.
If they're dropped, it's going to be a lengthy civil procedure if we can find attorneys willing to sue the police department and the district attorney's office for false charges and malicious prosecution.
Well, the damage is done. Even if they drop them, they've injured these people. They've taken their lives away. They put some of them in jail. This is nonsense.
It's more than nonsense. It's dangerous stuff, and I think that's the problem because I don't think they would think they know this. See, and they feel confident. The authorities, district attorney, the police chief, city manager, county administrative officer. I suspect that people knew about these charges, and they're going to proceed as though they had validity. That's the danger, and. It's going to impact activists, particularly, as I was mentioning earlier, journalists, because seven of the people named are either photographers, journalists, or bloggers.
Or community reporters.
Well, that's what I the same thing. I mean, they are targeting the people who are documenting what goes on, who are sympathetic, who are not the mainstream media, and that...
And yet, selectively, because as you say, they don't have Catherine Byers, but they have Robert Norton.
Well, no. Catherine Byers is not a journalist. She's not a photographer. She's not a part of the media. So, therefore, yeah, they are targeting people specifically with, I think, it looks like, one can't get inside the minds of these people to say, this is a conspiracy to crush independent journalism in Santa Cruz. But if it has that effect, one wonders, why, if it isn't, if they have to understand that that's what's going on.
And if they did it because they're slovenly, that's even more of a crime in my book. If they don't even know they're doing that to people, we have a serious problem. I mean, the whole police department.
Well, I think they know what they're doing. I'm sure Chief Vogel will come out with this. Probably will be a standard commentary about, these are vandals, they can't get away with these crimes, these are people who caused $25,000 worth of damage. I'm not quite sure if that's the figure he's used. I would venture to say, with some confidence, I don't think anybody on that list who I recognize did any damage whatsoever. I mean, there are people, certainly I would probably say that it's probable that most people on that list walked into the building and spent some time there. I did. I've admitted that on the air. But to suggest that that's criminal behavior is
there's no link between going to that building because you heard it's open and people are there, or because the parade happened to end there, and vandalism. Vandalism has overt qualities of action and intention.
Mm-hmm. So, so what I'm saying is, so the point is that they have a, you know, they put their, they've laid down their cards here. They've said they're going to proceed with. This is the most serious charge I've ever faced. These two felonies. That's state prison if you get convicted, or at least the possibility. But I suspect these are charges they're going to use to try to barter people, pressure people into admitting to lesser charges like trespass.
Or given over some names. That's what I worry about.
Anyway, it's the real question is how can the community respond to this? And well, I think the real thing to focus on is first of all, don't lose sight of what these protests are really about, which has to do with the ongoing criminalization of poor people. It has to do with the rip-offs by the banks and the total lack of political accountability for any of this stuff by any of the main political parties or any of the politicians in Santa Cruz who are supposedly nonpartisan in their local political offices. That's the issue. And these are the people who are in power, and these are the people who are being confronted or were being confronted and are still being confronted by a growing movement. I'm also tempted to say it's a shrinking movement because, you know, that certainly the General Assemblies have far less numbers of people than they did. But
I'd like to comment on that.
Go ahead, comment on that.
It seems to me that right now the police are banking on the fact that there's a lot more support for the property sitting vacant than there is for the people of Occupy Santa Cruz. And they think that they've got the upper hand because of that. That's where the fulcrum is. It massively favors property-loving people, you know. And it's a charge that, you know, real property is very charged in this country, and especially in Santa Cruz. Look at the housing listings, how many billions it takes to have one. So the police could have made a mistake. If Occupy Santa Cruz answers this stuff and starts responding to the situation, you know, comes to terms with whatever internal incompletes they have, and tells this community what's really going on in terms of foreclosures, in terms of this bank sitting empty and how many people have died on the sidewalk within a block of it while it was sitting there waiting for the right time for someone to turn a profit on it, and get the rest of the story out so there is some community support for Occupy Santa Cruz, and there's some Occupy Santa Cruz that likes the community and connects with it. You know, we've gotten insulated. I'd say I haven't even been able to be at a meeting lately because of surgery, but it's natural to behave this way, individually and in groups. But if you don't want to just go to jail for a big chunk of the rest of your life and watch people be torn down and decimated, already people are going to lose their jobs, then we need to get our message out. We need to talk to people in this town. And I don't mean like a monthly parade. I mean at least every other day talk to someone you haven't met before. You know, go to the parking lot of the grocery stores if you don't have a bigger or better plan. You know, some people aren't going to budge. But I think there's a lot of people who aren't saying anything one way or the other who agree that a person's life is way more important than how much a certain investment company can turn a profit for a bank on an empty building.
I would hope so. So, Linda, I know you're also pursuing your own case, which is to do with, you know, essentially you were sleeping in front of, you weren't sleeping, you fell asleep, you reportedly fell asleep, you're charged with...
No comment.
Yes, sleep crime in front of the courthouse a year and a half ago with the Peace Camp 2010. And I know that your attorney, Jonathan Gettleman, has put out a massive response to the district attorney's response to his earlier brief on this subject, which was an unusual writ of habeas corpus, saying you shouldn't have been charged with a crime because it wasn't really a crime, because it was First Amendment activity, and therefore the whole thing dissolves into essentially the right to be present, even if they like to say you're lodging. In fact, you're engaging in First Amendment activity. But where is that at now, and what's coming up next?
I can tell you a little about it. We don't know what's coming up. Either the judge is going to read these documents that are the response and the response to the response about the writ. The writ addressed that the lodging law itself needs to be examined in court. and we're lucky we got it, because earlier efforts to get this thing looked at where the law is considered as applied, the laws and laws, that is, have been just ignored by the judge, by two judges in my case. Excuse me, I need a drink. So now Jonathan's answer basically emphasizes, why would you use the lodging law in a demonstration that's a protest, that we have a right to bring our grievances to our government and to talk to our neighbors?
Now, for those who don't know, the lodging law says essentially it's you can't sleep or lodge on any public property. And the protest was about the issue that it's illegal to sleep anywhere and everywhere. It's period in Santa Cruz outside if you're homeless, and that there's shelters don't exist to go to for the overwhelming majority of people. Go ahead.
So it's apparent, building on that, that the district attorney has accepted my attorney Jonathan Gettleman's assertion that it's... I forgot my point here. Too bad. Sorry, radio people.
So anyway, what's coming up next? Do we have a date for when this is going to reappear in court?
No, either the judge is going to answer this thing I loved trying to explain, or he's going to call a date for a hearing.
Okay.
So that would mean he has more questions or something doesn't add up for him.
Yeah, I mean, when I talked to another independent legal observer, he was telling me he thought, unfortunately, your case is not likely to succeed because the issue rests on whether there's facts that would specifically indicate this is a political protest, and that is not something that the other side, the district attorney that's trying to prosecute you, has agreed to. Therefore, since there are no agreed upon facts, that what will be required is a trial to figure this out. Therefore, you cannot dismiss the case short of trial. That was independent legal observer's opinion.
I understand what you're saying, but I'd like to add to that, and I don't mean to refute that interpretation. I think that's right on as far as it goes. But this transverse, this final responding that my lawyer filed, is focused primarily on the fact that the DA does accept that definition by having not responded to it when it was put in front of her. So either she fumbled it, sloppy, or it's acceptable as fact.
That requires, I guess, a rather technical understanding and examination of all the documents. We're talking with Linda LeMaster, a one-time head of the Homeless Issues Task Force, as they call themselves, also of the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, the city's commission, and also a woman who's been struggling with poverty as a single mom all her life. Any other credentials you wish to put up?
Credentials, no. But I wanted to mention this class at the Civic. I know it's not your favorite kind of thing to advertise, but I think a lot of people in the community would be interested in it. From the turnout, a lot are already.
And I'm glad you did, because actually that was the reason I had you call in initially, which is there is a class by, I guess, run by Mayor Don Lane, or he's certainly...
He's certainly facilitating in some way. I don't know.
Every Wednesday at the
UCSC class.
Every Wednesday at the Tony Hill Room of the Civic Auditorium, I understand it, 7:30.
The Tony Hill Room is the side room on the driveway side of the building.
Uh-huh. And that, I know that was happening last night. I didn't get to it because I was too busy trying to figure out my legal defenses and get support from other people. But for the last, 3 weeks that's gone on at the...
Yeah, this is the third one. Last night there were 50 people. I guess a third of them might be UCSC students that are enrolled formally in the class. And they had three guest speakers. And they were talking about kind of an overview of what our services here for homeless people and what the struggles have been and who's getting left out and how they can help people right now. So it's very interesting. But you don't hear that kind of overview very often. You usually get a list, which needs deciphering.
Did someone record this whole thing? Or?
No, as far as I could tell, it wasn't recorded. And last week's wasn't recorded.
Well, I know that
last week's was about the media and how they portray
I know that at Huff we attempted, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, we talked about actually going to this meeting and confronting Monica Martinez, executive director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, as we call it, for, again, the misinforming the community, seeming to be colluding with police, denying homeless people access to documentation that the shelter is full when it is, not giving them documentation that they're on a waiting list when they are, all things we've asked for. And in fact, you've been a part of that process, Linda, over the last couple of years.
Yeah,
and Martinez has lied about publicly on community TV when confronted on these issues. We thought we'd, you know, bring it to her, but we didn't. But our Huff meeting kind of dispersed in something of disarray when we learned that the most jovial and chubby member, me, was likely to be arrested at any moment, and that might, you know, spoil the fun of the Huff meet. But what did Monica have to say? Anything of interest?
Monica wasn't the speaker yesterday, although she made an announcement. But speakers were Christine Siffel, who's the director at Homeless Persons Health Project, which I think is the cornerstone of hooking people who are outside up with any kind of health care if they don't have that. And then the other speaker was Danielle, who works the streets downtown, and hopefully to alleviate the police hassling homeless people, to help people who are acting out figure out solutions. And sometimes that becomes a long-term thing, she's saying. She ends up helping people get an income or end up in Dominican. They talked about three-day holds and alcohol and that kind of thing. And then the third speaker was Paul O'Brien, whom I'm worked with, and I know him as someone who's worked with the county on the continuum of care, or HAP requirements, that have been a bureaucratic heartache that has helped bring the like $4 billion last year into Santa Cruz County to finding ways to help all these nonprofits.
How much money into
qualify?
How much
four
money?
Billion.
4 million.
Four billion.
No. Four. They couldn't have brought $4 billion into Santa Cruz County. That's not possible.
Really?
I don't think so. No. That's. I know that they spend that much every week in Afghanistan, but you know that's for a better
maybe
purpose.
Okay. Maybe I got the facts wrong. So delete that.
I mean, there's no billion. Maybe million.
You didn't hear that.
Yeah, I don't think so. But you know, anyway. So it's interesting to learn that these are students. I knew that beforehand, but it wasn't kind of at the forefront of my consciousness, because these are the people that might actually be interested in the civil rights of the homeless people and real social services that homeless people themselves create, as they did at the San Lorenzo Park campground, that these homeless service providers are either opposed to or indifferent to, or at least not willing to publicly support.
I think that's harsh. I know the people in these nonprofits. I think that they're not supporting it, but I don't think that indicates how they feel about it.
Well, I don't care how they feel about it. I care what they say about it and what they do about it. They can feel all they want. I'm more interested in what actions they take. I said they're indifferent. Let me put it this way: indifferent in their actions. Worse than indifferent. Collusive of the abuses that the police did when they destroyed homeless property and essentially made, you know, turned 100 to 200 people into homeless refugees on December 8th.
I can't really comment on that, but if you said a certain person or a certain nonprofit group, or you were talking about someone in particular,
well, I'm talking
wasn't a party to it, but that somehow cheered them on, then I would respond.
I'm not talking about that they were cheered on. I know that there was I know the people with Peace Camp 2010 who attempted to get documentation from Monica Martinez when they got camping tickets that the shelter was full that night. This was 2 years ago. Couldn't get it. She turned them away. And that happened repeatedly, and then I think they changed their policy because they got a little embarrassed. And I know that for the last 2 years, as I said, people have not been able to get documentation as to their, you know, being on a waiting list, so they can show the police department, look, here we are. Stop hassling us, because the tickets you give us are going to be dismissed, because that's the new law. If you're on a waiting list, tickets get dismissed. So don't ticket us. Martinez has refused to do that. And she's also refused to say why, which to me is very telling. You know, she's covering up the fact that she has a cozy relationship or she has a, she's concerned about offending the police department or offending the merchants or offending rich donors. And again, it's hard to get inside someone's
mind. Oh, I think that's right out front. I don't think it's getting covered or close at all. She has put everyone who comes there to use the services on notice that they get to help pick up the neighborhood along Coral Street, and that the purpose of that is to help build community relationships with the businesses and other.
The purpose of what? I'm sorry, I don't
understand.
Linda, the purpose of what is to build?
To make better relationships with their neighbors.
No, no, the purpose of what? What are you talking about? I'm sorry.
Having groups of people, volunteers, including homeless people, walk along the streets and the railroad tracks and pick up the trash, and in other ways, get rid of blight. To pick up that neighborhood.
There's nothing wrong with cleaning up the neighborhood. I mean, I wish every merchant did it, and I'm glad when people volunteer to do it. However, I'm talking about her refusing to assist her clients in defending themselves against police harassment when she could easily do so by documenting the lack of shelter. That is what is my concern is, and that's what she's been doing for, you know, all of her tenure, as far as I can see. And that, I think, is what the students who attend these classes need to understand, that they get the impression and the illusion that they're talking to some kind of helpful service providers. And to some extent, to a limited extent, for a certain number of people, there's a certain amount of help available, not much. And the basic help, shelter, is not available for the average person, for the overwhelming majority of people.
But you sound and feel like you're getting indignant about it, and those people would agree with you.
Who would agree with me about what? Sorry.
The people doing that, like Monica, like Christine.
She would agree with me, wait a minute, about what would she agree with me?
The services they have are only going to help a handful of people. That there's more egregious people out that can't get the
That's
help
not what my point is. That's not my point. My point is, yes, that's true. We both agree on that point. But she will not take the action that would help the much greater majority by issuing the documentation, by exposing
right.
the situation. So she does not agree on the most
right.
essential things. And that is what the students need to know. That
okay.
is what is really the ugly reality under the pretty makeup of all this, all these Don Lane forums and continuum of care chatter, and even the HPHP help that I think is...
Robert, you're full of shit. You're trying to make it seem like these things are powder puffs. You know, those people are underpaid and they work really hard. I don't mean all of them. I don't have no idea about the elected, but whether they even earn their money. I don't know. But you're talking about people like Monica and the people in that campus over there from the county that have to recruit nurses, that keep getting burnt out, and they have to keep getting new nurses. They never have a peaceful day at work, you know? And they're always trying to help the people that are the most fried. And that's a glitch in the system. Anybody presenting should be helped. We have to make the services capable of touching everyone, and we have Let me finish. And we have to reroute these things.
Services are
for people who want them, and they don't cost you your dignity or take your power away.
This is nice, Red. You're Don Lane Jr. here. You're giving me an eloquent speech that Don Lane would give, but you're not attending.
You're trying to say that because what a certain set of other people are doing is, in your mind, a kind of powder puff version of giving a shit, that they have all these political motives. I think you have a handle on the civil rights thing, and a lot of these places aren't doing what they need to do in that regard.
We agree there, for sure.
So I'm not trying to dampen your voice, and I'm trying to restrain myself here, but to try to make it sound like what they're doing doesn't count either, I mean, the things you accuse Don of, he could accuse you of. Neither one of you are taking a new person home every night.
What's the point?
What I'm trying to say is you're trying to use your radio forum to call Martinez, who has the most authority short of their board at the Homeless Services Center, to do anything on the stonewalling as a response to these new regulations that the city attorney has put out. I don't want to disagree with you because that needs to be done, but I think we should go after the city attorney.
No, no.
You're whoa.
I don't mind. No, I'm going
to
interrupt you. Sorry. We have gone after the city attorney, and we will continue to go after the city attorney. This happened before the city attorney stepped in. It happened.
Excuse me, Linda.
It happened before the city attorney stepped in. Peace Camp 2010. Wait a minute. Peace Camp 2010 happened before the city attorney made any changes in the law. And the fact of the matter is that Martinez has had this, you know, unique position of constantly maintaining falsehoods in front of the community. I'm sorry. She does. You've seen the video. You know it's true. And I guess you somehow feel that the rest of her behavior makes up for that. I mean,
You told me in my ear, on the radio, personally, that she lied. And you explained it, and I'm taking you at your word.
Don't take me at my word.
Now
go look at the video.
On the radio. You talk on the radio.
Look at the video. Look at the video. Don't take me at my word.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what you're saying is for me to agree that everything she said during that show was devious, when all I had heard before was she told a lie. So it's just leaping around too fast. I don't know.
I'm not saying that everything Monica says is devious. I'm saying the general impression being given out by the homeless lack of services center and by her and by those who are colluding with her, I think, is a misimpression. That is to say that, you know, that really this is a hardworking group and we're doing everything we can and you know, they really could be better, but, you know, gosh, we're really kind of at the forefront here and, you know, we can make it better by just sweeping up the neighborhood, making sure the people are in the no loitering zone, following all the rules. It's mythological. It's not true. And it misstates what's really happening out there and what she's really doing. And your defense of these folks, I understand, you and I probably agree that it's really good when anybody helps anybody in any way. But if you look at the amount of money that's being spent on this,
I'm looking myself for where the amount was spent that way goes over what it would have cost if a rational person spent it.
I look at the amount of services that homeless people and Occupy Santa Cruz provided to each other for 2 months.
Yeah.
And I would suggest that it was probably, I don't know, what, 500th the amount of money. It provided a better living situation for those folks, more caring, more shelter, more, I don't know about better food, probably better food, more of a purpose, more of a sense of community, less regulation. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact figures, but I think it's pretty straightforwardly manifest to me. Now,
I like the comparison.
Yeah, I mean
I agree with your sense of value on this.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why I say
one's not an alternative to the other either. We need both of those approaches. Both those roads need to be filled with all those people that are wondering what they can do to help. Just get out there.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that the people at Occupy Santa Cruz are continuing to do that, and Monica Martinez is working on her own little store over there and maintaining her own set of grants and connections. And indeed, it's like, in a way, it's kind of like Valerie Corral. You know, Valerie Corral does a good job for a small group of people. But when for 5 years there was no medical marijuana places opened because of regulations that she helped collusively put together and behind closed doors with city council members, I had to constantly criticize what was going on in that regard. She had her own little cult, she had her own little group, she had her own little bunch of people that she worked with. She was the goddess in the center of that whole thing. And I think to some extent we have a similar situation with Martinez. Not quite cult-like in that way. And Martinez is probably getting paid more, although I don't know.
Well, give her more years, you know, because the person who criticized wasn't like that right off the bat.
Sorry?
Valerie wasn't like that right off the bat.
No, Valerie used to be an activist in the early 90s working with other activists. But once she got some power, I think that changed. And I think the same thing happens. It's unfortunately a corrupting influence that isn't, you know, the kind of thing that we see happening rather repeatedly.
This is where you and I just caught it. This is where we have a different way of looking at things. When you're talking about a closed group and how the closed group is therefore limiting and leaves so much out, I totally agreed with you. But then a minute later, you're saying when it's coercive like that. So you're saying that, I don't know, I don't see either one of them as coercive.
Well, I mean, coercive in this sense, Valerie Correll colluded with the city council to make sure that the various clubs that were open in 2000 got closed by the new set of regulations that were set up under Mayor Keith Sugar and the so-called progressives in 2000. And that was the case for 5 years until finally we were able to get one club open, Lisa Milano's Greenway, by getting a variance. But the fact of the matter is, it was coercive in the sense that it coercively shut down her rivals or the other clubs in the area. That's the point.
Coercive politicking kept any other places from opening their doors, you're saying?
Yeah, she had the power, and she was the one who colluded in those regulations. And it was done over the objections of Andrea and Theodora Carey and other activists who felt it was wrong. And it's, you know, and again, this is ancient history. We're talking 12 years ago. And I bring it up essentially for all the old diehards who are probably not listening to the show, but also because it's relevant to me, and I'm the big historical buff. Buff.
Yeah.
We're talking with Linda LeMaster here, who I continue to interrupt because I'm running the show.
Enjoy it while you can.
Yeah, well, I only got 12 minutes left in the show, and who knows how much time I have in Liberty. You never can tell. Yeah. I can't predict what's going to happen in my case either. You know, I haven't got an attorney. We'll see what happens. I imagine, I'm hoping that one will come forward, or I can squeeze one out of the... But anything, you know, tell me, give me the positive state. Let me give you a little opportunity to speak about what you heard last night from Monica and, she didn't speak, you say, from Christine Sipple.
She made an announcement, from, but the speakers, yeah, I already described.
Right, from Danielle and from Paul O'Brien, who did speak,
and from
the students who asked questions. Go ahead.
Yeah, there were some good questions. Some of the adults in the community who came in, I could see that these people had studied some of the kind of data that was there before. A man I met in the back of the classroom pointed out, well, how come Santa Cruz has 4% of its population being homeless, where all these other big cities around us have like 1% if they're not migrating here? And I think there's more than one answer to that, but I couldn't do that off the top of my head. I can handle almost any question that doesn't require memory of numbers about what's gone down here before. And people were interested in how you get from one service to another. And one of the presenters, Christine, had talked about how you could kind of look at the homeless population speaking as a group as four different kind of levels of or degrees of need. And that in our community, we'd come to serve them around these four groups. And the smallest group in terms of numbers, they were kind of saying, is the most expensive. And that's people that have a dual diagnosis, which probably means mental health issues and alcohol or substance abuse, and have lost housing before, which is a whole thing in itself, no matter what the reason. And there's no way they can get off the streets without a whole wraparound of support people. And you've met people like we're talking about. I have friends like Frank Lopez. You know, he's like me. He can't do anything by himself in a way, in this sense. You know, certainly not going to convince the landlord to try me again.
So how long? This lasted for about an hour and a half, this meeting?
Yes.
And you were there for the whole thing?
Yeah.
Well, next time, if you decide to go, I mean, we can give you a tape recorder. You can record the thing, and we can play the highlights or the lowlights or whatever. I think Steve Plaich is going to be speaking on the legal aspects of homeless stuff next week or the week after. And speaking of that, I'm going to kind of wind you down here, or wind down this conversation, try to get a hold of Steve, who's facilitating the General Assembly of Occupy Santa Cruz tonight. I mean, we might or might not be able to reach him. Linda, I appreciate your, you know, being willing to stand up to the, to a felonious talk show host here.
Robert, I have a lot of respect for most of your work. I don't always agree with your methods, and as you can see, I'm trying to do things a little different. But I care that people's rights don't be kept taken away, and I can't believe how fast these things can be pulled back from us. So I support your show.
Even activists find their rights taken away on occasion.
Well,
as we noticed yesterday, and it looks, I guess we'll be seeing that for the next few months as these cases drag their way through the courts.
I think it's a sign of their depression. I think it's a sign of the ungluing of our system. That they're going to go for the people they see with power, just like at Scotch Creek. They went for the people that looked like they knew what they were doing, that other people were looking up to first. Then they took the ones with the loud voices right in the county building. And that's what they're doing right now.
Yeah, you're referring to the 1977-78 Scotts Creek Bluff protests when the people in there living in their vehicles were massively attacked. I'm going to leave you, though, and thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And I'm going to try now to reach the irascible, or actually, not really irascible, I would say he's quite jovial, Steve Plaich. He may well be occupied at Occupy Santa Cruz, in which case we'll catch his answering machine. And
Steve Plaich from the GA, about to get you in on board with a special guest.
Now go ahead, Steve. Yes.
Sign in, please.
Who? Yeah, this is yes.
Mike Lockbaum, what's up?
Oh no, it's a Mad Dog Mike or a BLB. You're the man who single-handedly you survived the Oakland occupation.
Yeah, and you survived some stuff too, my friend.
Not
glad
yet.
You're all right.
My troubles are only just beginning.
And so are the people. So are the fascists. Am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Okay, and so are the fascists that think they can go around pulling people out of their homes like it's Nazi Germany. Your salute in front of the city council was must have predated yourself. What I was in Oakland when I read about this yesterday on the Facebook page that Becky Johnson, journalist and homeless advocate, and the most outspoken critic of... their Fuhrer, what's his face, Vogel, was arrested. They went to her home and they arrested her. These are Gestapo tactics to silence the press. I mean, I thought I lived in the United States, but obviously, KK California is not the United States. I mean, I know I'm rambling, but it's been an interesting week. I was in Oakland on Monday when the Oakland PD took the sound equipment while people were having a rally in Oscar Grand Plaza, and then the next day to hear that Vogel and Don Lane's critics are being arrested. People of the press, no less than three people of the press. You, Becky, and Alex.
There are others as well. I mean, there was...
And others as well.
You know, there was Brent Adams, who's a photojournalist. He is indicted here. There's... I got to get out my list. Actually, it's right here. Let me take a look. Repeating
and someone
again.
Someone told me, and I don't know if this...
Bradley Stewart, who's indie media, very good indie media journalist. Grant Wilson, who is a street performer and a, you know, sort of a kind of a mime troupish kind of guy who has been a peace activist for a long time. He's not a journalist, but again, he's a community activist. Yeah, I mean, this is true for sure. But what?
And apparently, I don't know if this is true, but someone had said that a journalist had said. So this is second or third now. Had said that Catherine Byers has a warrant out too. I don't know if that's true or not.
I don't think so. I haven't heard that.
I wouldn't think so either.
No, Catherine Byers is a council member and a former mayor. The point was that Byers, as well as other city officials, have been doing the same things that we did. That, you know, that I did. I walked in, and actually, I walked in with Catherine Byers. So, you know,
but it's amazing that. What rights do we have in Santa Cruz, in Oakland, and in California? I mean, what was the district attorney? Where the hell was his head that day? Well, you know what I'm going to say about that. But
what's been happening at the General Assembly? You were there tonight.
It's still going on. There were some points that were brought up. I don't, in my own mind, I don't think they were resolved very well, but. It's been a long General Assembly. I got here about 40 minutes late. and I don't know what time it started, but we're
is there
still
support for the those of us who have been, should we say, targeted by the district attorney's office and the police department?
We talked about that briefly, and there are going to be some people writing a statement condemning the actions of the police and the sheriffs or whomever was responsible for this, rounding people out of their homes, issuing arrest warrants, attacking the press, visibly attacking the press and the Fifth Estate.
Was there a suggestion? Was there a suggestion? I know I would have given a I would have given a suggestion that there be a, you know, either a march or a rally and a marching demanding that the charges be dropped, or that there be also a forum, a civil liberties forum, talking about these issues more broadly in the community, rather than putting together a, this sounds to me it's like an old story, sitting around a table trying to figure out, let's figure out how many hours we can spend putting out a statement on the issue, you know. Sorry, I'm it's the cynic in me that's maybe taking over here.
Yeah, so we, someone had proposed that we have, that we talk about, doing a Wells Fargo shutdown, and somebody else suggested that, that people talk outside of the group about that, or at least that's what I,
an autonomous action, eh? Another one of them, 75 River Street actions? That could be dangerous.
Another one of those,
maybe, yeah. Uncle Dennis will lead that action. Uncle Dennis has brought in some liquor. He's going to get liquored up. He's going to get, it's not liquor?
Not liquor.
What is it, soda pop? I'm mistaken.
It's a malt beverage.
Malt beverage, yes. Well, you know, I have to admit, BLB, we're at the end of the show here, so I wish I'd talked to you earlier. I take it I may be coming over to make a guest appearance before I'm, you know, taken away in chains. Gary Johnson actually was brought into court in manacles. You remember? You weren't in the court.
No, I missed that. So are you going to be coming by the steps?
I'm going to probably, I'm going to come over there and you know, briefly wave at all my fans and see what the story is. And
good, yeah, I'd like to, it'll be good to see you again. So, I'm going to say goodnight to all the listeners out there in Santa Cruz land, in the ether. Take care, y'all.
Hey, thank you for coming on, man.
You bet.
So, yeah, no problem. That's it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. And who knows, maybe forever if D.A. Bob Lee has his way.
Oh, not forever. We'll do the
just 5 to 6 years in the state prison.
No. We'll do the, like Mumia Abdul-Jabbar does.
Yeah.
Robert Norris from the county prison.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, it'll be or clink, clink,
clink,
clink, or gurgle, gurgle, or glug, glug, perhaps, as you have a little of your malt. So, yeah, I mean, I got to say, it may sound like I'm being rather frivolous and light about this. It's not light. Felonies are very serious things.
And you need an attorney, dude.
And I need an attorney, for sure, no question about it.
Before you go to court.
Before, and probably before I say another word, but, you know, that's me.
You can confess now.
I have confessed. I went on the premises. I didn't think it was trespass. I still don't think it's trespass. And I think this is a, you know, a very repressive situation that probably Mike or Bike Lock Bob, who just called in, talks about more eloquently and more angrily than I do. And I probably am just sort of tired of talking about it. And I can't. It's hard to get excited, even if you're the one that's being targeted. You know, I don't know. Thanks for being with me in this edition. I'll be back. Dennis, you have a thought?
You might be back.
I might be back. Probably will be.
Those two police officers standing out there on the curb?
They're just good friends. They're just good friends. We
want to know when you're going to be done.
You might go out there and tell them I'll be here for the next few hours, pondering the nature of things.
Well, you could stay for the next few hours.
Had you said this to me yesterday, you would have actually gotten a much more serious response, because I was quite terrified at what was going on. And I think I am underneath, but I'm maintaining a rosy exterior, as you can see, because it's more comfortable to be in denial than it is to deal with the reality. I'll be doing a show on Sunday, assuming I'm around to do a show, and I encourage you to give a call to 423-HUFF. If you have reports on what's going on in front of your eyes, don't let the harassment against 11 activists stop you from doing what you need to do to maintain your own self-respect and to support those in your community who are being mistreated. Thank you, and I'll be back, I hope.
And this is Uncle Dennis, and normally I would play music right now, but I can't. You say, why not?
Too much liquor? Is that the problem, Dennis?
No, the problem is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Oh, no. You were taking that seriously, huh? I've been playing music throughout the whole show.
Well, then the agents of Sound Exchange will be waiting for you at the curb too.
Oh dear! Well,
yeah,
well
and then
they're going to have to share me with
the
Bob
sheriff
Lee.
And okay.
Yeah.
Well.
Why don't you explain that to the listeners what that's all about, or have you already?
No, I'm going to because I can't play music. I do a music show, and I am prohibited by the Digital Millennium Copyright Act from playing music anymore. What happened? Well, Free Radio Santa Cruz received a somewhat brusque and, I might say, threatening letter from a group called Sound Exchange. What is Sound Exchange? Well, Sound Exchange is a group that was set up to collect money for copyright holders, and the money they collect comes from streaming online of copyrighted material, and in this case it's music. So